Welcome to Happily Family. I'm Cecilia
And
Hilke,
I'm Jason Hilke.
and we are delighted today to have Arlene Tyndall with us. Arlene is a mother who is so passionate about helping others break free from intergenerational cycles that she left her 27-year career as a clinical pharmacist and trained with Dr. Shefali to become a conscious parenting and life coach. Born in Canada to immigrant parents, she fuses Western societal ideas with the Eastern spiritual guidance from her mother's birthplace of Bali. Her healing journey allows her to be the mother that her sensitive, strong-willed son needs and informs her coaching, workshops, and support of parents from all backgrounds. Welcome, Arlene. It's great to have you.
Thanks for being here, Arlene.
Thank you so much for having me. It's super exciting to speak with you today.
Yeah, excited to talk to you about this.
I wanted to start because what I understand of your parenting journey is that you were doing all of these things, study and yoga and meditation and therapy, and you said this constant doing distracted you from being. Can you tell me about what that looked like, what that means?
Yes, I was searching. I was searching for answers. I was searching for checklists and things to say and what would make me a better parent. And in looking for answers, it really took me away and out of my body. I was constantly in a state of fear and anxiety, looking for the right things to do. And in that perfectionism and trying to get things right, I wasn't paying attention to what was going on literally in my body. Like I was disconnected from myself, I was disconnected from my feelings of anxiety and fear. And it was a perpetual cycle that I found myself in. And it was exhausting. And every time I thought I was doing the right thing, and I would end up yelling, and I would still not be the calm mother I was supposed to be, I should have been. It turned into a cycle of shame and guilt, and it perpetuated a disconnect in the relationship I had with my son.
So I can relate to this, and I'm guessing also there's a lot of other people that can relate to this, especially folks that are here because they're here because they want to work on their parenting, right? Like this is they're here to learn, to they're searching, they work hard at being a parent, and I definitely fall into that world of like working really hard at things and really getting focused on, the right tools, the right techniques, doing training, getting, am I doing this right and not being. How did you make that shift, or how do you continue to make that shift from the doing and the perfectionist of it and actual the being of it?
Yeah, it sounds so simple, but it's actually taking a pause and stopping from speaking, and to stop thinking to the thoughts that come into my mind from like all the different monkeys chattering of what should be, what could be, what I'm supposed to do, and actually taking that pause and breathing and being in that present moment awareness of, okay, where am I right now? I'm looking around, I see my son, and if I take myself out of my head and into my body, into my heart, then I realize I'm not in danger. I'm reacting from fear and a story that's in my mind. So simply that pause and taking deep breaths lowers my anxiety and my fear in the moment that I'm not facing a tiger, I'm facing my son. So it's that pausing and breathing.
So it sounds like you're not really forgetting all the stuff that you've done and the studying you've done, the reading you've done, and the work that you've done, but like you're actually pausing and kind of letting that be and using that to inform you and being who you want to be in that moment. Is that it?
Yeah, that pause and breath allows me to not react so quickly because I'm listening to that chattering story making in my mind. So absolutely, like the being is literally not doing anything, like not speaking, not running in and rushing in, like literally just stopping. And it's hard when you think, wow, that train's already headed for the cliff to put on the brakes, because you're exhausted, you're tired from work, you have an agenda in your mind. That pause, I remember hearing about the pause and you're like, come on, that seems impossible, but it isn't. It takes practice. It's a lot of practice.
Yeah, I wanted to actually go backwards a little bit because I think it's so important, especially when I'm having compassion for myself and trying to understand my own experience, to make sense of why I got to this spot where I am. even though it's not the spot that I want to be in, like understand the logic, the wisdom that maybe it wasn't super well informed, but that got me to here. Like whether for you, what's your understanding of how you got to that place where you got caught in a cycle of doing? Because I think you sharing your experience can help other parents understand, oh yeah, I do that too, or mine's a little different. Would you be willing to share how you got there in the first place?
Yeah, there's so many different levels of that because in the micro, like if it was just like in that last hour versus the macro in the weeks and months and years. So in the acute stage or micro, I'd be like, "Oh, I didn't stop to take a break. You know, I was on nonstop go 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 and I didn't drink water, I didn't use the bathroom, I didn't eat." And so I'm already very easily triggerable. Because I didn't take that pause for myself, even to rest and to attend to my own needs. So, attending to what my body's telling me I need was the key to understanding, I am now in a triggered state because I didn't meet my own needs. And in the macro, and months and years go by, like literally decades have gone by, and I didn't understand that I had to meet my own needs and not the needs of others. And that was in pleasing, in perfectionism, in trying to be nice, the good girl, the good daughter, you know, the good coworker. And it took years of understanding that my needs had to come first, and not out of selfishness, but of connecting to my body and listening to what I needed instead of pushing through.
Yeah, and I love this part of this conversation because I think part of the journey of parenting and this developing self-awareness is recognizing that macro piece, especially like, oh, this is my thing from the past. Like I have a lot of that, I need to earn love by doing the right thing, following the rules, making things easy for my parents. I need to, in order to be a good mom, I have to give up myself to, to kind of tend to their needs. And certainly to an extent that is true. Sometimes we do need to defer our own needs, but I also want to keep myself on the table. I want to include myself in the circle of people that I'm caring for while I'm in the process of parenting. So I appreciate like looking at things in the micro level, like just in this kind of situation, but also macro, how do we get there in the first place? And there are so many pressures in the macro level on families right now, economic pressures and
Societal.
societal pressures and gendered pressures that come more to moms or more to dads. It feels like there's a lot that parents are carrying on their shoulders.
Absolutely. And mothers, women, especially, like reading Dr. Gabor Mate's book, The Myth of Normal, there's a whole chapter on how women are like the anxiety absorbers for our society because we care so much and we nurture, and it's the mothering role to care give at martyring ourselves and sacrificing our own needs. So it is, it's a hard change to put others always in front of us and then realize we have to actually meet our own needs. So there is a lot in our society and culture that we carry for sure.
And as you talk about like the macro level, and it being more than just like what's happening in this moment or in the recent moments, but like from the way we were raised and our experiences in childhood, I can relate to that because I think there's times in our parenting when our kids were at certain ages and stages that I was having a difficult time because I was having a difficult time parenting because I think some of that was left over from difficult times I was having at that age. And so I don't know that I could really definitely like put it together and say like I can't be a great parent at this age because of that, but I just sort of noticed that a little bit. And I think you've talked a little bit in your chapter from the book about how childhood can kind of show up in parenting and in our past. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's like time traveling. In that moment of being triggered, whoever's triggering you, mostly it's the people closest to us, whether it be our partners and our children especially, you literally can vortex through a portal into that moment of woundedness that you then blame the person in front of you for that feeling because it was never processed. So I certainly had a lot of unresolved feelings from my childhood. And having been a daughter to immigrant parents, it was really hard to assimilate for my parents as well as me and bring empathy to their story. I understand now why my father is working so hard and not present, why my mother was struggling so much and getting so triggered in her own state of unworthiness and I don't fit in. And so vortexing travel, time traveling, sorry, back into that moment of woundedness, I blamed my son and I called him, "Oh, you're just like my mother," because I felt unseen by her. I felt disrespected by her. I felt unworthy of her love. And there was so much shame that you carry as a child. You blame yourself when you don't, things don't make sense. You dissociate from your own feelings. You dissociate from what you want to do or who you think you are. You become pleasing. And I became a pleasing perfectionist daughter trying to gain that love from my parents, not understanding. Like now I'm 51. And I'm just only now releasing that, going, I don't need to do that. I don't need to please everyone. And it's amazing how decades go by, and we still hold on to those wounds unless we resolve them, and blame everyone around us. We project those wounds to the people around us.
So I hear like one of the first steps is start to recognize it. How did you go about kind of healing that or working through that as you started to recognize what happened or what was coming up for you?
Well, it's not an easy answer. I ended up living in Bali, where my mother was born, with the movie in my head that we're doing this for my 9-year-old son, but it really ended up being for me because I was able to meet her siblings, my cousins. I went to funerals and weddings. I asked questions. And then understanding why she was so enraged all the time, why her family, it turned into an ancestral history, like excavating the colonization to colonialism, discrimination, racism. Our great grandfather was murdered, and it trickled down. And understanding her story, her father was alcoholic, and so she was abused quite often. Her sisters weren't because they were pleasing. My mother was different. She kind of was the rebel. Her head was in the cloud. So, understanding now that her childhood was difficult, and learning about my father as well, he's also from Indonesia, gave me empathy and compassion. And understanding their stories then made sense why my story ended up the way it was. But I did come to forgiveness and empathy and compassion with it, having done breath work, lots and lots of breath work in Bali, which is available anywhere. It's available in Vancouver even. I didn't know that because it wasn't part of my orbit when I was working here as a pharmacist. I did a lot of not only talk therapy, I did internal family system, family constellations, some therapeutic psilocybin. I called Dr. Gabor Mate and consulted with him. Like, so there was a lot of different tools you can use just to try to de-armor and get out of your head and more into your body. And so there was a lot of different tools.
It's interesting. There's a saying I heard that the older I get, the smarter my parents get. And I think I've recognized that. Like the older I get, the more I understand them and do that work to understand, what their life situations were like. And I think that sounds like a lot of what you did in this process, to kind of come to terms with your own parenting.
Yes, yeah, everyone's got a story, even our parents, and they've both passed away years and years ago. So it's fascinating to me that I could bring forgiveness and empathy and compassion to them and to myself years after they've already passed. Like, even if they were here, I might not have heard the words from them. There might not have been understanding between us. But the most important thing is that I understand. So
Yeah.
yeah. And I want to put an asterisk next to like what you said about like the smarter our parents got, but or maybe it's like the more sense we can make of them or
Oh,
the
yeah,
more
that's what I mean.
compassion we can have for them. Because the way that we were parented, like we might relate to it. Like it wasn't smart. Like it was painful. It really hurt me and I've got baggage from it, but it makes sense now when I can put it in that context. of understanding, oh, this is why this happened the way that it did. And even healing some of those things, doesn't have to happen with them in person. It doesn't have to happen with them during their lifetime. There's no time limit. There's no like expiration date on that healing. We can do that at any time in our life. We can go back and nurture those parts of ourselves. So ultimately, it's a very hopeful message that we can continue to do the work and do that self-reflection.
And what kind of role did community play in your healing process? You talked a little bit about like you lived in Bali and you're connected with your family and other community members, but could you talk a little bit about how has community supported you in that healing and continues to support you in your parenting?
Wow, community is absolutely the most important part of learning because we learn from each other, we lean on each other. And while in Bali, I was so fortunate to meet other parents, mothers, fathers, who brought lessons to me that I've never even heard of. Like, I had done a talk at the Bridge at Green School for parents, and my husband and I were talking about harm reduction and how we can bring that into our homes. Like, trauma-informed care and harm reduction starts in the home. And I guess I was crying. I hadn't actually fully processed some of the stories that I was sharing very vulnerably. And these mothers came out of the crowd after our talk and held me and hugged me. I didn't even really know them. And they said, "Oh, come with me tomorrow. There's a breathwork session." Another family organized another session for inner guided journey work. Like, their family systems, family constellations, all these things I never even heard of. And that opened the door. And being open-minded and having a growth mindset, while I was there, I created parent circles. We did workshops together, and it was all in the people that were there that brought a different energy, a different mindset, a new perspective, and when we held each other in that space. So it was a beautiful way to learn.
Actually, can I follow up with something about that? I'm curious. So I think it would be great for me to go to Bali and to create community in Bali, but I don't think that's really reasonable. And for many of the people here creating community, they may be thinking like, how do I do that? Like, what do I do to create community? Could you talk a little bit about that? Like, how did you create community? How were you open to community? Because I heard that there were people who were reaching out to you and you were open to it, but also that you were creating community. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and how you do that in like
Oh,
maybe the busy kind of everyday
right.
environment.
It does take vulnerability. It does take putting your hat in the ring and showing up to things where you may not know people. You might have to open up about something personal, and that de-armoring, taking down your wall and just sharing something vulnerable opens the door for someone coming, and offering you help, receiving help, asking for help. It does take a sense of openness, and I think with creating community, especially when you're busy, I think it's hard to make that time for yourself. But again, this is an act of self-care and self-love, is that you find a community that perhaps, like, I volunteer at family services to the drop-in centers for caregivers, parents, to help hold their babies and just ask questions. Like, quite often you can have 100 conversations of, "Oh, how are you? How was your weekend?" And it stays superficial. But if you ask a vulnerable question and you share something vulnerable, people open up like instantly. So creating community that is on a deeper level with connection requires your inner connection to yourself and some vulnerability to have a real, authentic connection with other people.
So easy just to stay on the surface level. Like you're saying, it's so much safer. And I think that's like, at least for me, that's where a lot of my community interactions will often remain. So silly on
Where we differ,
the
because
other hand.
I'm like, oh, I love questions and vulnerability. So, can I ask you very practically, do you have some favorite questions that you use when you're trying to connect with someone and get a little below the surface?
Yeah, definitely. I often ask my friends or the parents that I'm volunteering with. I'm like, "What's the most challenging thing you're going through right now? Like, what did you picture before you had your baby, and what's not working right now?" And so they open up, like they're not scared to answer. They're like, oh, well, because usually people don't ask, what's the hardest thing you're going through? Everyone just says, how are you? I'm fine. And we don't get anywhere deeper than that. So,
That's a good
yeah.
one. And also creating that space to hear it. I mean, I can imagine that you probably, I can imagine you especially and Cecilia create spaces where people are comfortable saying what's really going on. And you're like great listeners. And I'm working on that skill. I'm working on that listening skill constantly.
Yeah, well, and I think part of it is knowing that even when we're asking the question, we're not trying to like solve everything. We're not trying to give them advice. We're not trying to, we can't necessarily make it better and certainly not instantly, but we can at least honor their answer and be with them in that struggle. And just knowing, oh, somebody else knows this part of me that is tender and vulnerable and can be with me during this painful time. Like, that's often all I want. Like, that makes it like 50% better instantly. So I love that question for a way to go deeper. Yeah. And it works. Like, I would ask that at a birthday party with my friends. Like, what are you struggling with right now? Or on a walk, or like pretty much anytime.
I think
So.
actually what you said is what I have trouble with in asking a question like that is that I get into like fix it mode or like I want to be able to like I'm afraid to ask the question because I won't have an answer for it. You know, I'm afraid to like ask that question and then hear everything and then not know how to support them or guide them or give them any kind of and what I hear you're saying is that just being able to listen and be a place for them to talk about it is enough. So like I said, I'm working on those skills still.
Yes, it's very isolating. That's the whole part of community, is that you feel alone in your shame, like I've failed, I'm a bad mother. But the moment that someone can hold space and listen to you and validate what you're going through is the same for other people, then you feel like, oh, it's not just me, it's everyone. That sense of community holds us up for sure.
That's great.
Yeah. I wanted to circle back around to kind of where we began this conversation with how you shift from doing to being, because I am similar in that it's very easy for me to be caught up in the doing. It's very easy for me to seek wisdom in other sources rather than in myself. How do you start that, or how do you know, oh, this is one of those times that I'm not going to do what I read about in that book or on that blog or in that interview. I'm going to do this thing that with my child that just feels right. How do you start shifting?
Yeah, that alignment to your own values and to your own like inner gut feeling, that's a hard one to connect to, because we're bombarded with so much social media, and your mother-in-law's there, and you're like, there's just so much pressure in every moment. And I just want to clarify that it's not like I'm being all the time. I'm not like some Buddhist monk always in my being. Like, I'm flipping back and forth from my ego to, oh no, I need to be present, oh, to my monkey mind, to like, it's like a constant chatter back and forth. Like, that needle's flicking back and forth from being, doing, and fixing. Like, I'm like you, Jason. Like, I want to have answers for everything. So it's really difficult. It's not because we're perfect, it's because we're trying. And that flipping to your own, literally your gut feeling. Like, if you close your eyes and you can feel, whether it's in your chest, your stomach, your heart, there's something that tells you in your body that this feels right. It's aligned with my values. Then you follow that. And I can tell in myself when it's my brain telling me I'm, in fear of judgment right now. I'm trying to tell my son to do something because his grandmother's in the car with us. Like, I can feel my anxiety. I can feel the tightness in my chest. I can feel that I'm not breathing slowly. I'm connecting to some form of anxiety in my body that's having me do something else that doesn't make sense to me, because I'm trying to please someone else, or trying to bring an answer or control my son because people are watching. Then I know I'm not aligned with my values. Oh,
Yeah. So one
did
of the
you?
things.
Sorry.
Oh no. Did you want to finish?
Yeah, same thing I was gonna say.
So one of the things I'm hearing is at least part of the answer is for me to question the thoughts that I'm having and what I want to do, especially when I'm coming from that like anxious state or triggered state. But I can put more trust in the thoughts and things that I'm having when I'm in a calm and regulated state. Like that's at least part of the answer, is me just understanding emotionally where am I coming from here?
That pause probably helps in being able to get into
Yeah,
that state as
yeah.
well.
Definitely questioning the thoughts in your head. Like I got caught in the back seat of our car. I was with my son, and my 91-year-old mother-in-law is in the front seat and with my husband, and my son started singing this rap song that was very sexualized, and had like words that I was like, oh, and I was like, oh my gosh, what if she hears? Like, of course she could hear. But then part of me is like, well, who cares? Let her deal with that. Like the radio plays all these songs that seem inappropriate for a 91-year-old grandmother. I was like, okay. And I'm looking at my son trying to control him. Like, he's like, what? What? And he's just singing this song, and I'm trying to suppress his joy. Like, he's joyful. He's singing this song. He loves Sabrina Carpenter. Most of her songs have some inappropriate kind of story in them. And I was just like, my son's in joy. He's singing. And I'm worried about fear of judgment for my mother-in-law. So I was caught in that. So it happens every moment.
So true. So Arlene, as we're wrapping up here, do you have any final words or anything you want to leave folks with on this conversation?
Yeah, I think the idea that none of us are perfect, like even you and I and all these people, Dr. Shefali, we all make mistakes, no matter how much knowledge we have of written books or all these things. And the one action that I take with my son that even this morning I did was repairing with him. Like there's always an option or a chance to redo, repair, to go back into the room and say, hey, sorry, I totally snapped at you. I know you're trying to give me a kiss, but I'm sick right now and I pushed you away and that didn't feel good. Like I wasn't meaning to reject you. Like when you're trying to give me a kiss, can you kiss me on the top of my head instead? Because, because we're all sick. And then he understood. Like then he wasn't upset and crying and feeling rejected and shamed, right? So there's always a chance to apologize, take responsibility for the part we co-created, put ourselves, with empathy of how they might have felt in that moment, and then do a redo and repair. So I think that's the most important thing that my son actually feels and hears and experiences. And through modeling that, he does sincere apologies now as well. Not just this sorry, I'm Canadian sorry, but the a real apology. And yeah, it's so special to see him do that. Because then I know I've done something right.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that you acknowledge there that it's not just good for you and the relationship to be able to do a repair, but also it's good modeling for our kids. Like that's a nice motivation on top of it all, right? Like it's kind of like the cherry on top is that they get to see it modeled, and then they also have the freedom, the experience to be able to do it themselves as well.
Exactly. It's all modeling. It's not what we say. It's not how we work out. It's all modeling our energetic being. Our kids are watching us from the day they're born.
That's so great. You have some great materials online and lots of service that you provide. How could people find out more about you and what you have available?
Sure. My website is my name, so it's www.arlenetindall.com. On that site, I have my different coaching services. I practice as a facilitator in somatic alignment, which is part of breath work as well. And I also have a free gift for the conference participants. So there's a workbook and a short video on deconstructing our triggers and how we can build more connection by breaking that trigger cycle. So you can get onto my website, and I guess the link will be posted. Yeah, and I can send that to you.
That'd be great. We'll put that link in the speaker notes. People can click on that and get that free guide. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us here, Arlene. It's always good talking to you, and it's nice to go deeper and to have these reminders. Thank you for time, and we'll talk to you again in the future. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank
Take
you.
care.
Bye-bye.